is a very quick overview of a fairly detailed document that's document number 9 under tab 1. And you might want to refer to that for the details, because what I'm going to present is just a very quick summary of what I think that represents. First of all, I'm not sure how familiar council members are with the history of what this proposal, which was generated by a subcommittee of council executive directors, principally Dan Furlong from the Mid, Chris Oliver from the North Pacific, and Don McIsaac from the Pacific Council. And some background into what they were looking at. Well, first of all, let me give you some of the major elements of what comes out of this process, and some you may wonder at. And what you see on the screen is the elements that are in black are elements that the way we do things are really already taken care of. And those that are in red, which is hard to distinguish from the black, are the ones that would be new to this council. First of all, this process allows councils to determine the range of alternatives. Now, that may sound like nothing new, and it isn't for this council, but I'll get back into why that's an element here later. This process does give you slightly shorter minimum time frames for actions requiring an EIS. And I think that's principally in the scoping procedures and in the time from the time the staff produces a draft EIS to the time the council makes a final decision. Another major element is it's one process or document for both NEPA and Magnuson. This is a major point stressed by the two councils on the in the Pacific, or at least the North Pacific and the Pacific Council. This is not a change for us, since we have been always submitting one document, although we do it in sometimes the single document almost looks like two documents. But we do a lot of cross-referencing. The new major element of this process would be scoping would take place at council meetings. And you've just had some experience with that just before now, so you've at least got an idea of what that's like. And another change in this process is there would be no environmental assessments. All actions would have environmental impact statements. And I'm sure that's the element that people might have the most questions about why. Let's see. Well, to give you some background on why you have those major elements, and actually I meant to start with this slide first, is they're basically developed into response to problems faced by the North Pacific Council, and presumably by the Pacific Council. But I talk principally with Dave Witherell, who some of you may know, who's the deputy for the North Pacific Council staff. And the first problem they had is they don't have complete control over the development of alternatives, principally in their annual adjustment process. If they are developing an amendment that basically changes the whole management system or allocations, then they would have control over that process. But their annual process for changing TACs, or what we might typically do, or what the Mid-Atlantic might more typically do through specifications, the way that works in the North Pacific is they get the scientific information or recommendations at their September meeting. The first time they see them, they choose what options they want, and those are voted through in the November meeting. Now, the other problem is, and you'll notice this is down at the bottom, for these annual adjustments, they have been advised by NOAA General Counsel that they need EISs. So they can't do EAs. I'll get back to the reasons for that. But essentially, in their process, they get a draft EIS prepared by the National Marine Fisheries Service because the Fisheries Service prepares the EISs there. So they get a draft in September. They get to choose a preferred alternative from within that range. And those range of alternatives are basically specification alternatives given to them by a broad range by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and then the SSCs and their plan teams work on some of the alternatives within those ranges. So they don't get to specify the broad range of alternatives when they look at their annual adjustment process. Second problem they have in this process is to get an EIS in. Their annual adjustments typically are implemented after the start of the fishing year. So they have been interested in trying to shorten the EIS process so they can get closer to the beginning of the fishing year, basically because the fishing year begins using old data. And if the EIS process draws out, the changes are implemented later and later in the fishing year. Another issue is that they have had lawsuits that are based solely on NEPA process issues. So they were looking to simplify the NEPA process. And finally, as I mentioned, EISs are already required for their annual adjustments to TACs. That has been characterized by some as getting overly conservative advice from NOAA General Counsel in that region. However, it may have to do with the size and scope of their annual adjustments, because remember, they're setting TACs for, I don't know how many 100,000 tons, typically for different fisheries, and there are major issues involving marine mammals and forage for birds and other allocation issues. So it may not be that they're getting conservative advice. It just may be the scope of what they're dealing with. So anyway, that's what those problems resulted in, these elements in the plans. Council getting more input on alternatives, trying to get that time frame shorter. One process, because there was a kind of a divorce there between Magnuson and NEPA. One way they do it is by scoping the council meetings. And they have advocated just one environmental document, which is an EIS, which we would have a problem with, I think. The impacts of these proposed alternatives or alternative process, and the major impacts of our process would be, first, we would lose the option to prepare an EA instead of an EIS for changes to annual specifications. We would not realize any time savings in the actual preparation of the EIS documents. There's nothing in this process that makes the EIS any shorter. Reduces the number of pages, to put it simply. There are possible time savings for the council to complete scoping and the EIS process. In particular, there's shorter time from the completion of the draft environmental impact statement document by the staff to final council action. They do that principally by proposing that once the staff prepares the document, that it gets distributed and the council can act on that document within 30 days. What's interesting, I didn't have a chance to ask because I didn't spot it in time, was it seems to be that they would not have a chance to necessarily choose a preferred alternative once that EIS document is prepared, because it's simply circulated, and then the council, after a 30-day period, can act on that document. But again, remember, this is designed to deal with their annual tax setting process. Well, in looking at this process and taking into account the fact that it eliminates EAs, well, where would it leave us, and what might be some recommendations how to go forward from here? And these are just recommendations suggested by staff to put something on the table to get people's comments. First of all, I think this council can build on what they've outlined. There's nothing in this process in terms of what it says for EISs that would impact us negatively. It could possibly accelerate how we develop an EIS. Now, they may have some problems with CEQ and NOAA signing on to their accelerated process. And it probably means a little quicker, with a quicker process, is going to be a little less time for public input, simply because it will get one shot at an EIS, possibly, 30 days. Do keep in mind that this process is the most accelerated, and when a council is doing a major amendments, such as changing a plan in a major way and doing it over a course of a year and a half or 2 years, it doesn't have to go to this quite this shorter process. You can always build more time in it. You don't have to. This isn't a process you have to absolutely stick with. This is just a minimum amount that a council would have to do. The second consideration here is, in the future, our council might have to prepare EISs to make annual or multi-year adjustments, simply because as amendments become more complicated or more controversial, or our adjustment process gets more complicated or more controversial, and may involve more issues like forage and ecosystems management and more interest groups getting involved, you may someday be in the situation that the North Pacific is in, which you have to prepare an EIS to do an annual adjustment. You know, God help us from that we get there, but you might be there. The other thing is, rather than fundamentally changing what the three councils or the three executive directors who drafted this proposed, you might be able to simply add a recommendation that this process should not apply to actions only requiring an environmental assessment. I mean, there's no reason to throw out an environmental assessment. I don't know why this process couldn't be specified for an EIS, but we couldn't still use an environmental assessment for a framework adjustment or a change in the specifications. Third consideration is that the Fisheries Service and councils should continue to work with the Council on Environmental Quality to streamline the council's EISs through tiering and referencing previous analysis. And this recommendation gets into the issue that there's nothing in this process that's right now that's going to make our documents any shorter or more streamlined. But I think that that's something that if we can improve the efficiency of that, then you will have more staff time working on problems rather than staff time producing paper that just gets submitted and looked at. So that's basically what the staff has pulled out of this process, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Questions for Chris? David?
Hey, Chris, I got to say I'm just a little bit confused here. This only applies to annual adjustments?
No, this environmental review revised process would apply to all NEPA documents. It would say that all councils should submit only environmental impact statements for all their actions, and this is the way it should be done, the way they've outlined it here. Now, I haven't gone through the details of, you know, because it's right in front of you. It is an abbreviated process for environmental impact statements.
Okay, well, as an example, if we wanted to do a timely ability to adjust the fishery now, are you saying we're going to have to do an EIS?
If this were the process, and for example, the recommendation that this process should not apply to actions requiring an environmental assessment, that would be the case. It would worsen our timelines.
I got to say, I may actually live long enough to see this process grind to a complete halt in an attempt to comply with bureaucratic regulations. You know, our ability to do anything may be completely brought to a halt by having to comply with all this stuff, and as such, we may, in our attempts to make it the best possible management system in the world, make it unmanageable. I understand why all this is being put forward, and I understand why we, you know, are probably going to have to comply with it.
Yeah.
But I just don't see what this has to do with timely fisheries management.
Yeah. Just to give you some perspective, and maybe I went too quickly here, remember when their council gets to their September meeting, let's say on an annual adjustment that's targeted for January 1, they're looking at a draft environmental impact statement that has been prepared by largely by National Marine Fisheries Service. So they're starting from that point. And then they're compressing what's happening to them from, trying to compress what happens from September to the time that that action actually gets implemented sometime in the fishing year. And this would actually compress that part of it.
Right. What I'm concerned with is us.
If this council adds the second recommendation, then you essentially address that.
Okay. Because we're trying to find ways to do things in a more timely manner. And this may be timely in Alaska, where people live 700 miles from each other. But it's not timely here. And it may lead us in exactly the opposite direction. I'm just concerned, that's all. And I don't know if anybody else shares my concern.
I was just looking to see if I don't know if Galen Trumbull is still in the room, but if you have some questions about how things are done out there, he's had a lot of experience in the North Pacific. But I don't think it has any the fact that they live or 700 miles away from the council meetings. I don't think it's impacting this. That's just the way they do things. Yeah.
Captain Howard.
Just a little more background. The executive directors and the chairs have been complaining over the last several years during the reauthorization of Magnuson that NEPA has become a real problem. So, and our solution was to exempt fishery regulations from NEPA, and that's what we went forward with. And, of course, Congress didn't like that and said no, but we agree that it's got to be looked at, that preparing a 2,000 or 3,000-page document is not serving the public very well. They don't know what's happening. So they agreed and charged the National Marine Fisheries Service under this new Magnuson Act to consult with the councils and to consult with CEQ and come up with a better process, okay? And they have to do it within a couple months, by July of this year. They gave them a short time frame. So at this next chairman's meeting in May, we're going to look at it. And that's why every council was bringing this issue up. On the draft proposal prepared by those three executive directors, they suggested that everything be done by EIS. And I'd like to get some concurrence from this council that's not what we want to do. We want to continue to do EAs and categorical exclusions. And the main thing I want to bring back is the issue is that our documents are 3,500 pages. We've got to make them 300 pages or 150 pages like CEQ says they should be. So the issue, we're still not getting to the issue by addressing the process. The issue is they're too long, and we should make them 300 pages. Now, a lot of that might be our measures are too complex, and we've got to simplify. But that's only part of it. So I guess my recommendation is that we don't approve this, that you give direction to John and Rip and I to go to the meeting and say, nope, we want to make sure we can do EAs, and that you further fight to have further guidance, national guidance, on what an EA should look like. We've been asking for a template on what a 150-page EIS looks like, so we could use that as a template. And there's a lot of inconsistencies. We talked at different meetings where some councils are allowed to reference certain sections of old documents. Some councils have to redo everything. And so we want to be consistent on referencing and things like that.
Anyone else?
Rip.
Are you suggesting, Paul, that we need to make the recommendation a motion right now? I would put forward a motion that the council make a recommendation that this process, or that the NEPA, MSA NEPA compliance process should not apply to actions requiring only an EA or which
or a categorical.
Yeah, or a categorical exclusion.
Did you get that, Karen? Or Joan? The maker was Rip, and Dana was a seconder. I think you're, to the maker of the motion, you're referring to the proposed revised process? Okay. Or revised procedure. Any comments on the motion? Tom Hill.
Yeah, just briefly, does this motion imply that the other comment that Paul made about looking for a template is implicit in this motion? I think it needs to be, I don't know whether it needs to be in the motion, but I think it needs to be stated at the chairman's meeting that I humbly agree with the executive director. Having 2,000 and 3,000 page documents does not lead to clarity on the behalf of the public, nor half the participants that we deal with, and I think we need to try to find a way of making that point during the national meeting and emphasizing our need for brevity and in areas where it's possible.
Thank you. That's our intent, and we will be taking that down to the meeting. Anyone else on the council? Dana Rice, then Dave Gaethel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to clarify why I second this, I support making things simpler and easier. But in the great process of this thing, I don't want to see. I would be unhappy if we did something that eliminated the input from the public in this whole process. And I saw some things in that. It indicated that that might happen. So without elaborating on that anymore, I think, to put it another way, just because it works in Alaska doesn't mean it's a template for New England. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes, I would just like to add that if you could ask them if there are any
means of doing things in a more timely manner than either an EA or an EIS. When we contemplate relatively, as again, I'm citing this ability to do in-season adjustments, and if we're going to adjust something up, and if we're going to let people catch more, that seems to be relatively simple. We can do that, you know, almost with some kind of notice. But if we have to bring it down, it can get pretty complicated pretty fast and take time. And that time, all that time that we're not acting is time that our problem's getting worse. So, you know, if they could look at it from the point of view of how they could make it more timely, too, would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Chris?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but an in-season adjustment, if properly set up, shouldn't trigger these. But I'm not sure, and I'm looking to Pat a little bit. Okay. We should still be able to make in-season adjustments without having to file EAs.
That's if you expect to have to make it, right? What I'm thinking of is if you, you know, basically sign, you, conditions occur that you didn't expect, you're not expecting to make it, this is a whole new idea, then you have to still run through this whole process if you haven't laid it out in advance.
Anyone else on the council? Take a few comments from the audience. Dave Frula, then John Williamson.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I think that you're on the right track in being concerned about a process that works well for specification setting in the North Pacific as a template for all fisheries measures around the country. I would note, though, that it may not be as simple as whether something would be categorized as an EA or not. When we were looking at this, we were thinking about the issue of whether you're adjusting measures or trying to adjust measures under a plan versus amending your plan. I know that not everybody uses the same kind of framework amendment process, but what we've been advocating and what we had hoped would come out of the NEPA process is, for the scallop perspective, if you need to make adjustments to your rotational management plan, you should be able to do it in 6 months, not a year. To have to do an EIS or to have three public meetings to accomplish, you know, three council meetings to accomplish that, it goes in the opposite direction. So I don't know if it, again, it's hard to know how to label these things. It's EAs, it's categorical exclusions. It may also be, again, just this concept of adjusting things, you know, within fishery management plans and set up your plans so that you have some flexibility so you can use an abbreviated process. I hope I'm making myself clear, but that's kind of how you use a framework now. Maybe that's something that the council chair should also consider.
Yeah, David, we've mentioned that a number of times. What we call a framework process is totally different than what another council calls a framework process. And I thought we used to have a great one where all it would take is two meetings and you go right to final rulemaking. And we can't do that anymore. And that was a very good process for New England. And we've asked the lawyers and everyone to come up with a national policy on what, how do you get a management action accomplished? What is an amendment? What is a framework? What is a spec? But, you know, we haven't seen it. But we've been asking for that, exactly.
Thank you, and we appreciate that. I mean, what I think I'm hoping is that you have a concept that sits in many of your plans and in many of your regulatory schemes. And frankly, in just about every kind of annual spec-setting process that anybody has, which says that if you, we have a regulations that are the plan, that, and there are certain things that we can adjust within the plan, those kinds of things should be able to be done by an abbreviated process, what you call it. And again, there's two issues here in terms of process. One is NEPA, one is APA. If the NOAA attorneys are saying you need a certain level of process to comply with APA, that's one thing. It seems here that what Congress is saying, you ought to be able to
devise a NEPA process that conforms a little better with APA. So, again, I think that's on the right track. I hope this all gets conveyed and that's a good motion. Hopefully it can be made broader and the intent can be expanded to get into some of these other issues.
John Williamson.
Yeah, John Williamson from the Ocean Conservancy. Ocean Conservancy has already gone on record expressing concern of eliminating the EA and going simply to a standard EIS proposal that I understand has been integrated environmental impact analysis. And the concern that our legal team has expressed is that there is an existing body of case law developed over 30 years around that distinction between what's required for an EA and what's required for an EIS. And that the concern is that by combining the two, you're going to, first of all, apply a regulatory burden, which is what I'm hearing Paul say, and for relatively minor actions, and that you stand the chance of really watering down the use and impact of EISs when they are required, and that the more important thing is to protect the full range of criteria that we should be including in EISs. So,
anyone else in the audience? Paul Howard.
One of the other issues that we should all be aware of is that every council is different, including level of funding. And the level of funding in Alaska is, like, unbelievable. I say that with jealousy. The DSEISs are done for the council at the first meeting. Their problem is sometimes NIMS does a preferred alternative that isn't the same as the council's Magnuson Act alternative. And that's why these are causing problems, the different timing of the council acting under Magnuson and the federal requirement to do an EIS prepared by NIMS and given to the council. They have that luxury because they have plenty of money up there, and we don't. So to say that Alaska's system is going to fit New England is crazy. And so that's the message I'm going to go there with. We don't have near the people, the time, the money to do EISs on everything. Just can't do it.
Anyone else? Okay. Bill, is that sort of a hand up or no?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I get somewhat lost in this. It just baffles me that you end up with a 3,500-page document. And the offer is telling you that you need a 3,500-page document is telling you really should only have a 350-page document. You know, and it just gets mind-blowing. But what often occurs to me in this tussle that's going back and forth now for quite a while would be an umbrella EIS that this council made up on the first part of the year, and anything that went under it could be supplemented with an EA or a small, you make a blanket one that was broad and you just adjusted it for each plan with appendixes or whatever you want to call it, or do an EA to that one, or a system where you had something that was covered and you just adapt to it.
Okay, anyone else on the motion? Is that Chris?
Just to Phil's comment, that was our recommendation that councils work with CEQ to streamline EISs through tiering. What they mean is you tier down from an umbrella EIS. That's something that might work. It hasn't worked that well in the Pacific so far, North Pacific so far, but I think there's still hope that it will.
Okay. And call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Okay. It's unanimous. Motion carries. Oh, sorry. One abstention. Anything else, Chris? That's it. Okay. So we're adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow. Sally, would you like to make an announcement?
Yeah, we're having a reception over at Mystic Seaport this evening. It starts at 6 o'clock.